During our sermon time today, we are going to hear from three members of our congregation as they will share with us what God has done in their lives, what God is doing. And I haven't talked with each of you, but let's just come in the order in the bulletin. And so first I'd like to ask Sarah Ackerman to come up.
Okay, so Steve asked me to give you all a testimony of mine, which I don't think pretty much anyone except for Kendall has heard before. And so I thought I'd give you a little bit of history about myself, where I come from, where I've been in the last 5 years or so. And inadvertently, it has become pretty relevant towards All Saints Day next weekend. So I hope that this resonates with you all. So many of you know that Kendall and I are from New Jersey, and I did spend most of my adolescence in a suburban town about 5 miles from the infamous Jersey Shore. Although I was born into a Christian home and even attended a Christian academy for the first several years of my schooling, there are a few defining features of my early childhood that threatened to weaken or even prevent my own relationship with God. My mother was very ill with Lyme's disease from as early as I can remember. A desire to bring her the best care possible meant that we moved many times when I was young, in fact, 7 times within the first 10 years of my life. This meant not only changing school districts, which was quite challenging, as really only shallow and temporary relationships were formed between each move, but this also necessitated finding a new church family about once a year. Even after we finally settled down, after all of this moving and my mother's illness, my parents' relationship was so torn that this meant that my sister and I often spent separate church services with each parent. It's interesting because when Kendall and I travel home for Christmas, we always spend Christmas Eve service with his family at his family's church, the church in which Kendall grew up, in which he came to know God and came to know the importance of Christian relationships and about the really close family-like ties that can be formed between fellow Christians. This is not something that I ever saw or knew growing up. And although my mother was especially devout, for me, church was just another place to feel extremely anxious about forming relationships with people who I would eventually leave. These years instilled in me a strong streak of independence, but also a deep introversion that I've worked really hard over the last 5 years to try to break free from. The way that God reached me through all of these years and continues to pull him to myself still, as you may be aware, is through music. Though we did not have a consistent church family or church home as children, one of my strongest memories of my childhood is time spent in the car with my sister and my mom singing along to Christian radio. Whether it was my sister and I harmonizing to Rich Mullins on the radio, which was my mom's favorite artist, or making up our own songs, these memories are extremely important to me. And even when I felt very disconnected from God myself, words of his love and sacrifice permeated my thoughts throughout the day, even without having this consistent church upbringing. This passion for music is what finally led my sister and I to start attending a church regularly when we were in our teens as the youngest members of the church choir. While I cannot say that at this time I was for sure following Christ myself, it was the first time that I had a consistent church family and was surrounded by a cloud of believers. Through music, God ensured that I had Christians within my life, even if they were 30, 40, 70, 80 years older than my sister and I at the time. A desire to continue singing, and perhaps at this point a small seed of desire to continue Christian fellowship, meant that when I left home for college, I found myself auditioning for the college Christian a cappella group, Voice of Hope. While at heart, I know that my primary decision to audition for this group was to continue an avenue for singing, I now know that what I thought was a decision driven by myself alone was really God calling me to himself and providing a space for me to grow in his love and fellowship. It was in this group that I met Kendall, who, as you know, I eventually came to marry. It was also in this group that I was first challenged truly to read God's word, to explore its meaning, and where I developed friendships that prompted me to grow and confront my stony heart. From this group, I became involved in two other Christian fellowships on campus, even those in which my primary role was not to sing. Within these groups, I not only grew in my knowledge and love of God, but extended this newfounded passion to other students within the campus. Finally, I began to pursue God as much as I know he has pursued me since I was very small. This relationship between myself and God has been tested in recent years. I won't conceal that. From 2011 to 2014, I very suddenly and in two cases needlessly lost the lives of my grandfather, mother, and cousin. Since then, I've lost my grandmother, Kendall's grandmother, and my final remaining grandparents' health is rapidly failing. With each of their passing, I was and continue to be filled with grief, confusion, and a sense that death, the loss of someone so close, is unnatural. It never feels right or real, no matter how long time has passed. But what could have easily turned me completely from God or turned me to apathy, as has happened with my sister, has instead left me with even more assurance that this life is not all that there is. To quote one of my favorite authors, J.K. Rowling, "It is the unknown we fear when we look upon death and darkness, nothing more. I know that my Redeemer lives, and that in his life, so also those of those who trust in him. These deaths that would have so easily uprooted me as a child have instead worked to strengthen my own resilience and relationship with him. And I will keep on singing his praise in return."
Hello. My name is Joel Bartlett, in case you don't know that. Thank you for the honor of sharing with you this morning. Most of you know that my lovely wife, Mary, and I have been members of this church on and on for about 12 years. Through good times and bad, we have enjoyed your church family, our church family, and have grown spiritually through Steve's teaching and your support. For that, we are eternally grateful. But our story does not end there. Family in most cases implies children. Unless you count the four-legged variety, Mary and I do not have children, or we do have children, only of the four-legged variety. Mary has her banking family and her nonprofit work, which thoroughly involves her in challenging and rewarding endeavors. I, on the other hand, have my business and my nonprofit work to keep me engrossed most of the hours of the day tonight. We share a few distractions that keep our feet on the ground and some balance in our lives. Did I mention that Mary is a banker? And bankers generally do not like restaurants as businesses. They are historically bad credit risks. Only one in three make it past 3 years, and most of them run on very slim profit margins, mine included. So it was very surprising when Mary, my mom, and her mom supported my purchase of the sub shop in August of 2011. This is where the story becomes more relevant to what we're doing here today. Most people think of a business as a process of being paid for producing goods and services for clients and customers. As long as the customer keeps coming and paying, the business keeps surviving day to day. This view is highly dependent on successful production and assumes a lot about the customer and the producer. I enjoy a certain different view of the business. At the center of every business are people. All business plans and processes aside, unless you have a cohesive team of individuals working on the same page and enjoying the work, customers will realize that there are better choices to serve their needs and will take their businesses elsewhere. Especially in the restaurant business, the choices are endless. So how can I achieve this cohesive team necessary for success? That is the question I have been wrestling with ever since the first day I walked into the then-struggling sub-shop to introduce myself as the new owner. I did not know what impression I would make on the staff and what I would think of them. I was their new leader, but would they be my followers? Their most recent leader had been leaving them for quite some time, and the team was on remote control. And the business reflected that situation. We needed to create a team. Only a strong, cohesive team could overcome the challenges of remaining in business and growing. We immediately created some general standards of behavior and operation. First and foremost, the idea was of communication. There was a standard of trust and reliability. And there came the idea of fun. Business people don't really think of fun as an essential part of business, but it certainly is. We're going to spend much of our lives together over the next how many years. We might as well enjoy it. I am sure you have noticed that I have not mentioned anything about making sandwiches. The sandwiches have always been really good. Just the environment in which to make them consistently needed to become more trustworthy, reliable, and fun. And I believe that is improving every day. Over the years, team members have come and gone, and only one of the original remains. We have had our personal challenges, and the team has responded each time with appropriate support and encouragement. We have had a teammate lose family and friends before their time, lose his way, and threaten to commit suicide. The team rallied around their teammate. He got clean and sober, became a full-time student and a leader, and still remains with the team today. Another teammate was beaten almost mercilessly by her husband. So even though she was a valued member of the team, she was encouraged to flee the area. At last contact, she was safely at home in a different state with her child and her mom. Another teammate came to us after graduating from Sponsors. This is a program that is a halfway house for convicted felons wanting to make a better life for themselves after serving time. There are many challenges these graduates face, legal and otherwise, before becoming full-fledged members of society again. I am pleased to say that after giving birth to her second child and completing many difficult tasks as a condition of legal restitution, she has just received her driver's license and is a strong, reliable member of the team for 4 years. Not every hire becomes a full member of the team, and those that do not fit usually realize it very quickly. This is an indicator of a healthy team environment. None of the situations I have mentioned would have been possible without a team of disciples to the notions of trust, reliability, communication, and fun. The business is growing. Team members step up to ensure success in all sorts of situations, and sandwiches are being made better and better. I am blessed by a wonderful group of individuals that create a team of disciples to the principles that make them successful in life and business. Thank you for your support as a church family, because without you, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing today. We all need the support to become what we need to be in life. May God bless you. Thank you.
Before I begin, I'm not really a public kind of speaker. So
And my story is not exactly polished, but maybe someday when I grow up and my children are out of the house, then I can write polished stories again. But this isn't exactly a personal testimony, but it's just something that I've been sort of thinking about as our world just feels superficial a lot, and there's just a lot of things that are really hard to grasp when it comes to how there's beautiful things in our world, but they're not exactly right or godly. So anyway, I just wrote this up. The other day, I had the opportunity to visit a long-lost friend. My friend happens to work on the University of Oregon campus, so we decided to meet for lunch. As I stood there by the university bookstore, I suddenly realized the rock I've been living under for nearly 10 years. My only exposure to college students and young life has been in the news, which hasn't been a very positive exposure. But suddenly, this stay-at-home mother was surrounded by a swarm of young people, all walking to and fro with no seemingly care in the world besides their iPhone and newest pair of shoes. I stood there for a bit, mesmerized by a life free to do whatever suited my fancy at any given point in time. I imagined not concerning myself with mortgages and retirement funds or with grocery shopping and to-do lists. And suddenly, a familiar face came through the crowd and my friend had arrived. My friend happened to work next door to the School of Business, which has tables that we could eat at. So he grabbed a bite to eat at a chicken stand and then walked to the School of Business. The doors of the building opened, and I suddenly found myself in a palace. There were several floors with beautifully crafted stairs circling to the top of the building. The floor was shiny and new and glistening. The whole inside of the building seemed to be radiating with newness and light. To top it off, everyone in the building was beautiful, too. Every person was dressed well with the latest fashion and perfectly manicured makeup and hair. None of the students had wrinkles or looked like they had been up all night worrying about anything. Amidst the sparkle and lights of freshly ironed hair, I was sitting there alone with my friend having a quiet conversation about life's trials and joys and other things that matter to us. We had a good conversation. After her lunch break was over, I left the building, hopped into her minivan, and drove home to my house, which is in a lower-income neighborhood, where the floors have not even been swept today, let alone newly remodeled. I immediately took off my nicer coat and exchanged it for an old sweatshirt that I didn't mind getting stained. I slowly started to get over my little cultural shock experience, but it left me pensive about some things. In foreign countries, we see impoverished people and feel sorry for them. We see their skeletal figures and long for them to be able to have food and basic necessities of life. Seeing images of starving people on our televisions makes us uncomfortable, and perhaps even a little helpless. We might question the character of God when we see them and wonder why some people have so much and some people have so little. But that day, I looked around me and wondered, what would happen if our eyes were enlightened to see spiritual hunger all around us? I thought about how perfectly happy things look on the outside and how appealing to the senses they can be. But what if we slowly uncovered all the layers behind the things we think are so great and the people we so admire? What if we would learn quickly that things are not always all what they seem? The building that someone spent millions of dollars on to make may not have been made with very honorable intentions. Many of those perfect-looking students are alone and destitute, possibly suffering from things like internet addictions, loneliness, and from insecurities brought on by the layers and layers of problems in our current culture. If only we could see the spiritual deprivation of others physically, we might see many more skeletal figures walking around in our well-fed society. Then I thought about the authenticity of God. If God can never lie as we are taught in the Bible, then he will never cover up bad things to impress us or draw us to him, because that would be lying. I'm fairly convinced that God is not opposed to fine buildings or fine-looking people, but he doesn't necessarily need a pretty building to convince us of who he is. Instead, he gives us an ugly cross where all his intentions are laid bare, every seedy deed is brought to light and burned away in a fire. Then God can feed us. He can give us his food so that we can grow and never be lacking in real nourishment, that we might grow into everything good he intended us to be and be continually made right and pure and holy.